All right, everybody, this is the Georgia Songbirds, and we're here with Miss Demi Michelle, and we're talking a little bit off air, but you're from Pennsylvania, right?
I am. I'm from Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh. Okay, so introduce yourself a little bit and kind of tell people about you.
Yeah, so I'm Demi Michelle. I am a songwriter, recording artist, and podcast host. And I am also an author currently seeking literary representation. And so I'm a super creative person all around, from the music to writing to the podcast. And I love everything that I do.
Yeah, I was reading that stuff about your podcast and your writing stuff, and that's so cool. So go ahead and plug your podcast. I have no problem you doing that.
So my podcast is Write on Track, a songwriting podcast, and the write is spelled WRITE, like in songwriting, and new episodes come out every other Sunday, and I talk to everybody in the music industry, from songwriters and artists to radio presenters and many more. It's a fun time.
So where do you get all your hosts from? Do you have to dig them up, or do they pretty much come to you now?
So it's really interesting. So the guests pretty much come to me now. I know quite a few publicists and managers at this point, and just guests themselves reaching out. And I was not expecting that. I don't know about you, but when you start, you don't really have super high expectations. Like when I started mine, I just wanted to do something fun. Like I got the idea during the pandemic. And it was originally like just something I wanted to do with my friends and just other talented industry professionals I wanted to talk to. And I only had like a couple episodes out. I think it was like the third or fourth episode that was out when I got my first request from a publicist. And I was not expecting that. And it kind of just snowballed. The show just turned 2 years old on May 30th. Which is crazy, and I've released 118 episodes by now, and a lot of them mostly have come from requests lately, which is really nice. But at the same time, it's like I haven't gotten the opportunity really to reach out to somebody personally to get them on, just because spots fill up so quickly now. And so I've been having to consciously like block off certain spots. Like, this is Demi's person that I get to request, because like I'm booked through July now and I'm getting into August too, and it's like it's a lot to keep up with, but I'm super grateful for this whole experience because I wasn't expecting that.
So, yeah, you sound like me because it's funny that I started like in 2019 and I did it too. I didn't think nobody wanted to talk to me. So I just kind of set it up because I'm a songwriter and I have a band. I play music. I've been doing it for a while. And so I'm here in North Georgia. I'm like, well, I know the North Georgia scene. We'll talk to the people here to see how it goes. And then I ended up getting a spot at a it was a kind of a writer's round. It's kind of a thing with a guy named David Sutter. He set it up. And he let me come in there. It was like a church. It's called Oak Church here in Canton. And I would sit in a room and they'd have like a show. People can play like six of their songs and they had like four or five different artists. And so I would talk to them like after their set and would do like interviews. And it snowballed from there. And I don't get publicists as much. I get more of promoters and I probably do get a few publicists and but they send me all their artists. And I always tell anybody that listens to it, send me as many as you want. That's what it's for. I have no problem with anybody promoting themselves. I know some people have issues with like promoting another podcast or somebody in the same lane. I don't care. I mean, what? I'm the same way. I'm booked to July. I'm actually honestly booked to August, but and I do interviews probably 3 to 4 times a week now.
Oh, wow.
Because of all the people that have contacted me, and I'm still 2 months behind because I pre-record everything.
Yeah.
And so I had to now start it with like two episodes a week, plus the countdown that I do every week now too, which started because of the pandemic, because of no guest. So I completely feel for what you're saying.
Yeah, and it's difficult too, because when I started it, I was still doing my master's degree. And so on top of that and doing music stuff, I was doing one episode every other week, and then I quickly realized that's impossible within the amount of requests. So I switched to two every other week, which I've done pretty much the entire time, except for a period of time where I had to go to like six episodes a month just to catch up. But I ended up having to go back to two every other week, just because my focus is always quality over quantity. And it got to the point where, because I do this myself, like on top of everything else, I wasn't having as much time as I wanted to really go through the episodes and do all the editing, and I was getting overwhelmed. And as soon as I started to feel overwhelmed, I knew that I had to go back to the two every other week. But it's difficult because I've had to turn people away at times and say, I don't have space, but in a couple of months, like, I can reach back out to you. And as an artist myself, and I don't know if you feel this way too, but like, it's difficult to do that because I know what it's like being on the other side. Like, I know what it's like to try to get interviews and put myself out there. And so being the one to tell another songwriter or artist, I'm sorry, like, I don't have space right now, I know how that feels. And so I hate doing it. But I think that's just the reality of being in this kind of space when podcasts start to get more popular. There's only so much you can do until you start sacrificing the quality of a show.
Yeah, exactly. And I would agree with that 100% because I'm very funny about the editing stuff too. Because I will sit down and edit, and I used to could do it where right after they talk, I'd sit down the next day, I'd edit it, and then I'd have it out in a week. I can't do that anymore. There's just no way.
Yeah, it takes a long time. I don't think people realize there's some shows that are completely unedited and some shows just like that vibe. But with me, I'm so particular. Like, I'll go through and literally listen to something multiple times and cut out silences and weird noises and stuff. And it takes time. And so when someone is given the opportunity to be on the show like this, like I always say, like, especially for the artists and anybody in the music industry, even if it's not timed perfectly with a release or something, you're always going to want to promote yourself and you're always going to want to have stuff to share. So if that means you need to wait a couple months, I would wait a couple months. I have a friend who runs a blog, and we literally had a conversation about this where someone, a couple times, artists have reached out to her to do a review or an interview on her blog. And if she couldn't publish it on the exact date of the release or soon after because she was backed up, they basically told her, forget about it. And I don't understand why people are like that because somebody's giving you an opportunity and you need to realize these things take time and people have lives outside of this too.
That's why the first thing I always tell people, this is pre-recorded. It's going to be out in a couple months. I can tell you that right now. Now, I was reading too. You got a BA in creative writing, so you wrote a novel. You love novels and thrillers, right?
Yeah, I love thrillers and mysteries. Those are my first two loves as genres. I'm starting to get into fantasy as well. I wrote three manuscripts so far. My first two I wrote when I was in my master's degree, my MFA in Writing Popular Fiction I got last June. And the first manuscript didn't get anywhere. I got a couple requests when I was pitching to agents, but I didn't get any offers, sadly. So I'm currently pitching my second manuscript, which is a thriller, and my third one is a fantasy that I'm hoping to pitch in the fall if the thriller doesn't go. And so I'm just trying to keep writing because the publishing industry is a rough place. I thought that I knew what I was getting into from being in music and facing rejection and all of that, but publishing is a whole other level, and it's taken a lot of time to get used to that and to not let doubts get in the way and feel the negativity because there's a lot out there and it's very difficult. But I'm hoping to one day land an agent sooner rather than later.
I assume it's kind of like music in that aspect, is because you've got to push it out and somebody's got to take a chance on you. I mean, like when you go for songwriters, like normally if you want to write for a big artist, it's hard to get in there unless you know them. You just got to know the people and they got to know you. Other than that, it's hard to get in. It's who you know. I imagine that the novel side of it would be kind of similar, is they already have their writers, they already have people they know. Why are they going to take a chance on someone new who doesn't have anything?
Yeah, it's very much the same in the fact that, someone really needs to take a chance on you and that it's subjective. It's very subjective. And the same thing is with music, where you can send your song out to somebody, they may hate it, somebody else may love it. Same thing with books. And I know personally myself, like, I'm a very like active reader. I'm always reading. And it's the same thing where, like, if I'm looking on iBooks on my phone, like trying to pick what book I want to read next. All of the books on there were published. Somebody loved them enough to publish them. But as I'm looking at the descriptions, like I can know like within 2 seconds that book's for me or that's not for me. And I imagine it's the same for agents when they're trying to find what books to represent. But you're exactly right in the fact that agents, they already have clients that they're representing, so their clients come first. But when they are looking for new books, they say they're open to queries, which is querying, that's what it's called when you pitch to agents. So you know who's open and who's actively looking. So it's not like you're querying somebody when they're closed. That's a big no-no. And so just like really big with networking as well, like continuing to improve my craft, doing conferences, courses. I just finished a course with an editor and just trying to meet people because I think the thing with the agenting side of things is there's so many authors that I personally know who have gotten agents just from cold submitting queries, which is how they find a lot of their authors in their inboxes. And so like just following submission guidelines and making sure they're open, but the subjectivity of it's really difficult because you never know, like, especially with the rejections now, they don't really give you personalized feedback. And so, if you get a rejection, it's hard to tell, well, did they not like it because they didn't personally connect to it, or they didn't really like the concept, or is there something wrong with their writing that needs revised? And when you don't get that feedback, it's hard to tell. So it's a minefield. It really is.
See, that's to me is so cool. When I was younger, I wanted to write. The problem I always had is I was horrible, and I still am horrible with like punctuation. The actual story, I'm good. I can tell you stories. I have ideas for stuff that I love to write down. It's just I know that the proper way to do it is not the way that I'm writing it. And I that's probably a lot of it's training and learning how to put run on where stop the run-ons and how to do the correct punctuation. But I love
Yeah.
that stuff. I loved reading as a kid too. I still read every night before I go to bed, and I have to be careful because if I get into a book, like I know there's an old saying, don't judge a book by its cover. That's what I judge by. So if I'm going into the grocery store or I'm at a bookstore, the cover grabs me. If I like what's on the cover, I was like, okay, what is this? And I'll get it and I'll read the back. I was like, oh, this is pretty cool. I'll read that. I mean, I love Stephen King and Dean Koontz. That's kind of who I stick with. But I have started branching out a little bit. I'm kind of like, it's funny. Like when I go out to eat, I eat the same thing every time. And my wife goes, why do you do that? I'm like, because I know I like it. I don't want to pay for something that I don't like. And but every now and then a cover of a book will grab me. And I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. Like there was, I wish I could remember the name of the book now. It's kind of like almost like a Rosemary's Baby kind of story to it. And if I could find a book, I would say it, but I'm in my studio, so the house is behind me. I can't get in. But the book on the cover, it was it's kind of a dark cover, and it had like a baby carriage, like an old timey, like a baby carriage, like with your stroller, I guess that's what they call it. I was like, that's cool, let's read it. And so I read it, and then what it was about two babies born. One was supposed to be an Antichrist, and one was supposed to be Jesus. It's supposed to be like a rebirth. And it was so cool trying to figure out which one was which. And you didn't know until the end. I mean, this book
Oh,
just like
so good.
mesmerized me. And then I got to the end, I was like, well, that sucked. Because in my mind, I had it totally different. It completely got me to the end. And it's like, it felt like they rushed the end, but it was so good. I wish I could remember the
I'm all
name of
for
it.
the plot twist. I'm all for those. But I completely relate in the whole thing about, like at the restaurant, eating what you like or reading books by the authors that you like. I literally, like, every time I'm looking for a new book, like, if I'm not reading or looking to read a book by an author I just read or I've read before, and I just, like, read the blurb or whatever, and I have heard something about it or whatever, and just started to read it. If I read a book that I end up not liking at all, I will literally, like, just stop reading it and then go back to a book I've read before that I knew I liked just to get back into a happy reading space because I always get bummed out when it's like, oh, I bought this and I don't like it and now I'm not gonna finish it. And so I always go back to something I like after something like that because I'm always bummed out.
Now, do you read books more than once?
Yeah, I definitely
See, I can never do that. There's only one,
do.
there's and I tell you, there's only one book series that I've read multiple times. Other than that, I won't read a book more than one time.
Which one?
Harry Potter.
Me too. What house are you?
I'm a Gryffindor. Come
I'm a Hufflepuff. I'm
on.
proud. I'm a proud Hufflepuff. I read Harry Potter way too many times. My friend and I actually had a Harry Potter podcast that we quit because we were both in school and it just became too difficult. But I love Harry Potter. I actually met a handful of the cast. There's like a Comic-Con near where I live, and Matthew Lewis came twice. I met him twice. He plays Neville. He's my favorite. I met Tom Felton, who's Draco. I met the twins, and I met Ginny Weasley, Bonnie Raitt. So,
That is so cool. That
yeah.
my oldest son is 26 years old. So he was, I guess what came out in 2001. So he was 5 when Harry Potter came out. And I remember him dressing up as Harry Potter for Halloween, and I had to dress up for as Hagrid because but I've read those books. I've probably read every book maybe 7 times each.
Yeah.
I just have. I just
Yeah.
they're so good.
They are. They are. My favorite's Deathly Hallows. That's my favorite one.
Even read the I don't know if you read the screenplay that she
Oh, yeah,
did
I
the
did.
play.
I read that too.
And I'm like, okay, I know this isn't a book, but I'm still going to read it. And it was good.
Yeah.
Now I've only read that one once, but I did read the other. When she makes it a
Yeah.
book, if she makes it a book, I'll read it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, Kershaw was good. I haven't seen the actual play yet, but I would like to.
Now, see, I can feel the passion for your novels and your writing, and it kind of goes hand in hand. But what made you want to songwrite too?
So I actually like I grew up just loving music, and I started playing piano when I was 10 years old. And even just before that, I have these memories of my friends and I just writing little songs and putting on little shows for our parents in my backyard and stuff. So I was always super creative and writing songs, but granted, back then I didn't know it was called songwriting. I was just writing songs with my friends. But when I was in college, I double majored in music and creative writing. And my junior year, I was like super overwhelmed with a lot of stuff. I was overwhelmed with school and other stuff going on. And that's the first time I really dove into songwriting, and I wrote a couple of songs, and I was super insecure about my writing at first. And so I would write like late at night when no one knew, or like in practice rooms at school with the door shut when no one knew what I was doing. And it took me a really long time to show anybody my songs. But I ended up showing a couple of my friends my song Into Focus that ended up me being my debut single in 2019. And after that, it kind of snowballed. But I turned to songwriting, and I still do to just process things and share my story because I'm not a super vocal person in terms of just walking up to somebody or texting somebody and just pouring my heart out. I'm not like that. I'm super introverted and I deal with things on my own. And so my way of processing things and sharing my story is through songs. And so that's when I started to really do that in college. And then when I graduated undergrad, right when I was starting my master's program, that's when I started to record music and release music. And I was doing it more for myself without any major intention of becoming an artist, really. I just wanted to share my music. And just kind of like with the podcast thing I talked about, unexpected, I started to do interviews and play shows and stuff. And here I am over 3 years later. So I'm excited.
Well, let's listen to one of your songs. So, which one would you like to hear first?
Oh my gosh. Okay. Let's go with I Hope You Know You're Lucky. That's one of my favorite songs on my EP.
I hope now, as a songwriter, I like the story, so you got to tell me the story behind the song.
Okay, so for I Hope You Know You're Lucky, this one I wrote in 2020, and it was one of the first country songs I wrote. I'm a multi-genre artist and I'm super proud of that. Some people are, against the whole multi-genre thing. Not me. So that's one of the first country songs I wrote, and I wrote it at a time where there was somebody I had feelings for, and I found out that they were in a relationship with somebody else. And this song is me basically writing a letter to the girl. Like if you listen to it, the lyrics are laid out as if I was writing a letter, and I'm basically speaking to this other girl saying, you basically have everything I have, so I hope you know you're lucky. And it was a really emotional song for me to write. I wrote it super quickly. I want to say within like a half hour, 45 minutes. It was super fast. But at the time, I was working on my debut album, which was more contemporary pop, and so it didn't fit on there. And so I just held on to it until until I did my EP, It Is What It Is, that came out last November, which is multi-genre, and it fit nicely on there.
Does he tell you that you're beautiful and that you're his whole entire world? Those are words I wish he said to me. But to him, I'm only a distant memory. You don't know who I am. That's okay. But I gotta say, when he surprises you with roses, I hope you know you're lucky. When he stops your tears from flowing, I hope you know you're lucky. Sometimes you don't notice you've got something gold until it's gone. So when he looks into your eyes and says, you're lucky. To the girl he'd cross the ocean for, does he say forever and always and promise you he's there to stay? Those are words I wish he said to me. But to him, I'm nothing more than history. That's okay, but I gotta say, when he surprises you with roses, I hope you know you're lucky. When he stops your tears from flowing, I hope you know you're lucky. Sometimes you don't notice you've got something gold until it's gone. So when the sun to rise on the day I finally find the one. And if he surprises me with roses, I will know I'm lucky. If he stops my tears from flowing, I will know I'm lucky. Believe me, I will notice I've got something golden and hold on.
Really good. Are you there?
Thank you.
All right. It reminds me a lot of like Lisa Loeb. Do you know who Lisa Loeb is?
Huh?
You know who Lisa Loeb is?
No, I don't.
She was from the 90s. You're probably young. You're probably younger than that. You probably won't know, but she did that song Stay. And it was, she was in the 90s, they had a lot of female songwriters. I'll say a lot. They had a good bit. They had Jewel. They had Lisa Loeb.
Yeah.
That came in that vibe. And it was storytelling, and it was simple, and it was just, it was pretty. And it was something that you don't hear a lot of anymore. And that's the sad part about like country music is you don't hear the stories of it. I liked it. I like stories, and I could tell talking to you about like your storytelling and stuff that you're a good storyteller in a song. And you would think sometimes that as a writer that it wouldn't translate, but if you know how to pull back and write just the a moment, I think you can. I think like you did, I think it turns out really, really pretty.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I think storytelling and songs is so important. And I do a lot of that in my pop music too, which is really interesting. One of my songs that I wrote on my debut album, Dear Diary, the song was called Will I Ever? And the single version is like more pop produced, but it actually got quite a lot of airplay on country stations. And I was kind of confused. I was like, that's a pop song. But the way the lyrics are and the melody is, it definitely has a little bit of country crossover appeal. And so I think that storytelling is something that is lacking in many areas. And I think it's just because the industry is going in a little bit of a different place commercially. And I would love to see just the raw storytelling come back.
Yeah, that's why when I started the station part of it too, the like this has always been a podcast first and foremost. It's always a setup, but I'll try to expand it. And with the radio station, I'll play anything. I don't care what it doesn't matter the genre, doesn't matter whatever branch you want to call yourself. To me, when you hear the word songwriter, I think the first thing people think of is of course folksy Americana. You know, country. That's just what they think. But songwriter falls in every genre of every music because they write the music. And I like that stuff and I do miss it. And I do know that people say, oh, well, you need to have stuff repetitive and you need to have a beat. And you, yeah, but you need to have variety. And that's where that comes in.
And you need to have heart too. Like, the song needs to have a heart to it. You need to be saying something that you authentically believe in, or that's part of your story in some way. And that's why, like, when I'm writing my music, the last thing I'm thinking about is what genre it is and how it's going to be produced. When I'm writing my songs, the first thing I'm thinking about is, well, why am I inspired to write this in the first place? Thinking about what the concept and the message is. I typically write lyrics first, along with the melody sometimes, but it's usually some kind of lyrical concept. Then I usually go to my piano or grab my guitar and put together a chord progression. So it's oftentimes, always, not oftentimes, always just a very stripped down version of a song because I play acoustically. Like, my songs need to work on their own just with guitar and my vocals or piano and my vocals. And when I have a song that's strong on its own, then when I decide which ones to record, then I start to think about, well, what instruments I want to bring into this, and then that just leads to what genre it ends up sounding like. But I think when songwriters go into writing a song with the intent of it has to be this genre, it has to be this kind of sound, you're just putting it in a box.
Yeah, I agree with that 100% because I've been told my producer says I have musical Tourette because I will put some of the weirdest things in songs. I love it. When I get into a song and I hear after the production starts, like, ooh, let's try steel drums. Let's try French horn. You know, I do that all the time because I call my music mutt music because it's not going to matter. It's a mixture of everything. And I like that stuff. So where do you record at?
I record at the Vault Recording Studio on Neville Island in Pittsburgh, and
Okay.
I am so thankful to record there. My producer, Bob McCutcheon, is amazing, and we've been recording together since my debut single, Into Focus, and I really appreciate that he lets me be super hands-on with the production. I'm super hands-on in the studio, and I'm aware that, like, not every artist gets the opportunity. Some producers are a little more controlling with how the production goes, but Bob really lets me contribute, and then when I'm working with my other musicians who I'm bringing in from time to time, it's a very collaborative process, and I think that that's super important with any art form like music that is so vulnerable and so rooted in human emotion. I think that collaboration in the studio definitely brings something special to songs.
Yeah. And I like that. I've met a lot of people lately out of Pennsylvania. I have. I mean, there's a lady is cutting one of my songs out of Pittsburgh. Her name is Freddie Stover. That she goes by Miss Freddie.
Oh, cool.
And it's blues. And there's a promoter up there named Michael Stover that does a lot of work for people in that area. And he does it all over. But it's funny, every year I do a Georgia Versus series. I don't know if you've ever seen it on what I've advertised. What it is eight songwriters from Georgia versus eight songwriters from a different state every year. And it's what I do is I give them all access to my Facebook. They just take it over, and it's a friendly competition. Sometimes there's prizes and a little bit of money, depending on what I can get from sponsors. But it's kind of just fun. And right now, there's two states that are running for next year, Texas and Pennsylvania. And if you want to do part of that, I'd love to have you on. If we went up,
Oh, yes, that'd
yep.
be
And it's all original stuff. I only put originals. The only
fun.
time I let you do covers is like the last round, if you make it to the last round, because it's like a 40-minute set on a socially distant fest page. They have like 200,000 followers or whatever that I think. So then, because not everybody that gets there maybe not doesn't have 40 minutes worth of material, so you can do covers if you need to, but I always prefer originals.
Yeah, definitely.
That's just me.
No, I agree. I think if you're a songwriter, original music comes first. And that's why, like, I get really, a little anxious when I release cover songs. I only released two. And my first one was Homecoming Queen by Kelsea Ballerini. I released last year. And the reason I did that is because that's a song that changed my life in terms of making me fall in love with country music. And Kelsea's my favorite artist, and so I was in the middle of projects, and so I needed music to release, and I was still getting new original material ready. And so I thought it was a good time to release a cover song. And so I took a major risk with that, but I actually wrote my own bridge. So her version doesn't have a bridge in mind. I wrote my own. And so that was my first one. And then just on May 12th, I released my rendition of If I Die Young. And so it's the same situation. I'm currently in between projects and I'm recording new original material, so I didn't want to go too long without releasing something, so that's why I did it. So that's the only time I really do cover songs. But it's also fun to put myself to the test as an artist too, because I didn't write the song. I'm still approaching it as if I wrote the song, taking it to the studio how I would record if I wrote the song. So it's a different perspective. But anytime I get any opportunity to do like Facebook Lives or any kind of interview thing, like I try to do original music, that's what I'm trying to promote most.
Okay. Now see, I do here on the show, I do have a kind of a game that
Uh-oh.
I challenge and you kind of walked into it. Now
Oh,
it's not something that it's not timed, and if you don't want to do it, you don't have to. I don't force I can't force nobody to do it, obviously. But because I'm again, I'm huge on originals. I'm not a big covers fan. I understand as a musician, if you're playing in a gig, you got to do covers. If I do a
Yeah.
cover, it's going to be my way. I'm never going to do a cover the original way. I just can't. I'm not
Yeah,
that
no, same.
I'm not that good of a musician. I'll do it my way. So what I have is I give my guest a cover song challenge. I'll give you a song and you do it your way. No time limit.
Gosh.
Whenever you get it done, send it to me. You send me a video. I'll put it on TikTok and I'll tag the artist. You never know. Maybe they'll see it and they'll reach out and they'll hear your voice. It's kind of a way to promote yourself and doing it in a fun way. Because when I do, I tell you examples of songs. I do When Doves Cry by Prince, but I do it a whole different way than Prince does. I do a Danzig cover, Mother. Obviously, it's going to be a lot different than him. He's a heavy metal rocker kind of guy, but my voice when I sing is growly, so I slow it down and I make it sad. I turn Beat It into almost like a reggae style
Oh,
song.
cool.
So
That's
whatever,
so cool.
whatever way you want to do.
That's so cool. Wait, so this is like a thing that I do like after, not like on the spot here?
Yeah, not on the spot. I wouldn't make you do it on the
Oh, I
spot
thought I was
here.
gonna have to, oh, I thought I was gonna have to like freestyle something.
No, now see, I do have parts of what I do in the interview, which I'm about to ask you one, is I do have something I call the Wheel of Death. And it's basically like a 20 question kind of games that
Oh,
I
those are fun. Okay.
interject. So I'm going to give you one right now. And I'm going to hit a little button. I don't have to have sound effects. I have them on the phone. And that's I'm going to do a different one because that's the question it asks is a question I ask at the end. Okay, here's one. If, because you're a songwriter, you're an artist too, but if anybody could sing your songs, who would you want to sing them?
Kelsea Ballerini, because she's
Kelsea
my
Ballerini.
favorite.
Yeah, I kind of figured when you said she changed your life. See, now who influences your music style? Is it Kelsey or is it other people that kind of you've taken
Who
shape from?
influences which side?
Who kind of inspires your music style? Is it Kelsey or is it just
Oh, my
different people?
style. Yeah, I think for me, I listen to a lot of music, typically like mostly pop and country with other genre flavors. And so I think my influences come from a lot of different places. I always say my three main inspirations in terms of style that you can kind of hear in some of my songs are Julia Michaels, who she's an amazing songwriter. She's the one who inspired me to write songs from the beginning. I actually met her at a concert when she opened for Maroon 5, and I literally cried. So Julia Michaels is one. Taylor Swift is another big one, and Kelsey is one. But in a lot of the music I'm currently writing, which is more poppy again, I've been listening to a lot of Sofia Carson and Sabrina Carpenter, and they're having a lot of influence on me. Sabrina especially, like a lot of her songs are super fun pop sounding. A lot of hers are sassy, and my next project is super sassy, and Taylor's Reputation album is super bold and fierce and sassy too. And so a lot of my songs are, they could fit like in that world at the moment. But I think like overall, like when I'm like thinking about what artists inspire me, it's the ones that are authentically them and who have that storytelling in their songs. Like Taylor Swift is one of the best storytellers of my generation, I feel like.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, like other songwriters, whether in pop or country, that really do something unique with their music instead of the stereotypical thing all the time. I mean, honestly, like I look at my favorites playlists on Spotify or just like my big master playlists I have, and a lot of my favorite songs are by artists who are, they're bigger, like they're signed, but they're not the ones always heard on like top 40 radio. Like a lot of my favorite artists aren't on top 40 radio. And that's like a interesting observation. I don't know what that says about top 40 radio, but I just like the ones that are authentically them and are doing what they want to do without massive, you know, restrictions with commercial appeal.
It says that the people in charge need to listen to the people who listen to them, actually listen to the music. That's what that says, because it's Taylor Swift for all intents and purposes. She gets so much crap, but she is a great songwriter and a great marketer of her stuff. And I've said this on a podcast a lot. There's so many people like growing up that music is it's gonna it kind of it's timeless. Like you can put in Elvis Presley, people know who it is. You can put in the Eagles, you can put in different styles of people that you're always going to remember. And I always ask, I'm like, who do you think from this generation will people remember in 30, 40 years? I don't think they may remember Katy Perry. I don't know. Nicki Minaj, probably not. But Taylor Swift, I guarantee you they're going to remember Taylor Swift.
Yeah, for sure. And I think the interesting thing with her is like the multi-genre thing. Like she does multiple genres and also like making a massive statement with the whole thing of her re-recording her albums because of the whole situation with her label. I just think like she's an amazing songwriter, she's an amazing artist, amazing performer, and just also like with the business and marketing side, like she just is making a massive statement, and I know it's ticking some people off, but like I stand behind owning your masters if you wrote them in your bedroom when you were 14 years old, you know?
Yeah. And I see I get both sides, but I do think you should own it. My producer gives me the master. That's part of it. I write the song, gives me the masters. He has no control over it. Now, but I'm not a global phenomenon 14-year-old girl who they're gonna try to can see has talent and jumps on the bandwagon. That's exactly what happened. And because she was young and naive about the business, she did it. So okay, she signed a contract, regardless of how she feels or what happens. That's the contract that she learned a lesson right then. And she's Taylor Swift, and she got out, and it doesn't matter. She can go write another 100 songs and put them out, and people are going to love them. And that's why I said she's such a great marketer. I loved her earlier stuff, her pop stuff. Not so, there was a few that were pretty good, but like that Bad Blood album, I just like, next. I
1989.
like that album. Was
Yeah, I think
that
that's what Bad Blood's on,
okay?
1989.
What was the one? I think it was the one after it then. I don't know what it was.
Reputation.
Maybe because it was too synthy and just too I didn't like the
Yeah.
sound. The it wasn't the songwriting aspect of it. It was more the
The
production side.
production, yeah, that's my issue with Midnight's. Like I there's some songs on there where it's like, oh, I like this song, but the production is like not my favorite. That's my issue with Midnight's.
See, I listened to Midnight's when she did that. I was like, okay, let me see what the big deal is. Why is everybody freaking out over this? And I listened to it, and honestly, the impression I got from it, and this may be what she was going for, is I just see a bunch of teenage girls crying in their pillow listening to that album. I do. That's what I got from it. I was like, okay, maybe she was going for that because that's her fan base. So, okay, more power to her. All right, Demi, what's another song of yours you want to listen to? You want to share with everybody.
So you can play Halfway Out of This Town, which is also on the EP.
Okay, halfway out of this town. And again, like I said, I want to hear stories. So what's the story behind this song?
So this one is a song that I wrote when I was trying to get out of a toxic friendship, and I wrote this song where it can be perceived as a friendship or relationship just to leave the door open for more people to relate in the way they have to. But in this song, with this situation, I'm the kind of person who doesn't like to just cut somebody off or walk away. I'm always like, oh, I'll give them one more chance, they'll get better, they'll get better. But the reality is some people just don't change. And with this song, it's me finally walking away. And I wrote the song through the lens of a town. And so I'm using all these images and metaphors that it's like, you know, like when you see a butterfly spread its wings, you think of me. And when you're driving down the country roads and my favorite song comes on the radio, you know, like stuff like that. And it's basically saying like, you're gonna basically see me everywhere now. You're gonna get deja vu all the time now because I'm gone and you're gonna realize what you missed. And so now that I'm halfway out of this, I'm not turning back around. And so that's halfway out of this town.
That's cool. Now, see, you say deja vu. I have a theory on deja vu. Actually, we're gonna get sidetracked here, by the way. I have a big tendency to do this. So if you have to go at any time, you better let me know because I do get long-winded. You won't hurt my you won't hurt my feelings. I think deja vu, and I've said this before, but I have an opinion. Deja vu to me is something is you can see your life. And because I've had it multiple times. So you see stuff points in your life, they're crucial points in your life. And I think once you catch up to your deja vu, you die.
Oh, that's deep.
I know. The songwriter deep and dark in me is like, okay, I think it's like, but that's what I think because I've seen it happen. It's like, it's so weird. I had deja vu today. I was reading something and I probably had this dream 2 years ago. So I have a feeling that when I have a deja vu and it happens 2 days later, I'm going to die. That's what I think. Once you catch up to it, you're done.
My
That
gosh.
that's a peek into your future. All
Well,
right.
this song isn't a prophecy. I don't want the person it's about to get deja vu and die,
Right, I'm gonna mute us and we're gonna hear this for the first time. No deja vu people, I promise.
Between the blinds and you're on your phone to pass the time. Do you write to me, then press delete? When you're driving down a country road and my favorite song comes on the radio, do you sing along or turn it off? You had your chance to embrace me. I had enough, can you blame me? But I know it won't be easy to escape. I'd hang around all the rocky roads I can live without. You broke my trust, confirmed my doubts, so I'm not coming back for another round. I'm halfway out of this town. When you're lost in a crowd on Friday night and you hear a voice as sweet as mine, spreads its wings and you skip a beat 'cause you think of me. Do you You broke my trust, confirmed my doubts, so I'm not coming back for another round. I'm halfway out of this town. I'm halfway out of this town. Won't lose my direction now. I bet since I walked out the door, you're living with deja vu. Rocky roads I can live without. You broke my trust, confirmed my doubts, so I'm not coming back for another round. It is what it is, get over me somehow, 'cause I'm halfway out of this town. I'm not turning, not turning around. I'm so much better now.
That is a very visual song.
Thank you.
That is very visual. And I was sitting there listening to it, and as soon as it started, I was like, it reminded me of something. Your voice, it had a quality, and it's not really the tone of it as much. It was just the way your phrasing. It reminded me a little bit of Norah Jones.
Oh, really?
Just the way it was phrased, it made me think of her. And like I said, it's not your tone, because she has a very unique tone. Like,
yeah.
She's very, very unique. But the piano, I guess it's the piano playing and the phrasing. And like I said, I love piano songs. I can only play piano if I'm playing in the key of C and four chords. I can't do anything else. That's that.
Yeah, I play piano on that.
That was really good. I think I've only wrote one song on piano, my song called Murderer of Love. And there's no piano in the song when I took it to the studio, but I did write it on the piano. Did you prefer writing on the guitar or the piano?
I prefer writing on the piano just because I am very trained in piano and music theory. And so when it comes to, even if I'm going to be recording like a pop song or a country song that like I wouldn't have piano in it as a main focus, I still like to write on piano with like the chord progression, because I still have a very much like wider understanding of different chord progressions and suspended chords and seventh chords and things that I can do on piano that I'm not able to play on guitar because I'm not that great on guitar. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to like a ballad like this, I love composing accompaniments on piano and just letting that musicianship kind of come out, because I don't get to do that in all of my songs. So when I get to, it's really special.
So you can, I'm assuming, because you took all the music, you can read music and you took music theory and all that stuff, right?
I did, yeah.
See, I can't read music. I have no idea with theory. To me, the way I did it was I do it by ear. Everything I do by ear. So when I was writing, I'd write a song, I would take the chord progressions from another song and write my own to it, because I was like, okay,
if they
know theory, I don't. I'm sure they did it right. I'll just use that and make my own songs.
Yeah, I think the thing though that I've noticed is that the classical world is very different than the commercial music world. And when I started songwriting, I had so many things going on in my head, like, oh, this chord can't go to that chord because that's not allowed in classical music. And it's like, wait, no, I'm not writing a classical piano sonata. Like, I can break those rules. Mm-hmm. And so where it's like a really great way of knowing what I can do is kind of having to break away from classical roles, because that doesn't matter in pop and country songs.
See, there was something I read, and I wish I could, and you may know the name of it. You may know what it's called, but I was reading, I'm a big Santana fan. I love Santana. I love him and Eric Clapton are my favorite guitarist. I just love them.
But I was reading there's some kind of theory or style or something that people play in. Like you get the basic, the 1, 4, 5, you know how they do that, all that stuff. But and then it's like minor, major, however it's set up, right? That's the normal. They have different versions, like Santana plays, where it goes to like the maybe it starts in a minor and then it goes to a flat or whatever. There's I don't know what it's called, but it's
Oh, like the substitution chords?
I don't know if it's substitution. I had a theory book and I read it, but I like I said, it wasn't Harry Potter, so I only read it once.
Yeah, there are a lot of chords that are like you have your whatever, like you have your key. So say you're in like C major, like you have the chords that are like the tonic chords, like the chords that fit. But then you can do like flat six, flat seven, like chords that are like outside of the key, but they can still work. That might be what you're talking about.
Probably because I think it was something tonic. It was the word thing. See, now to me, then if you can do that, what's the point of theory? If you can put whatever you want to, then you really don't need theory. You just, if it sounds good, put it in.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, there's a lot of songwriters I've co-written with who don't know theory at all and they're fine. But there are a couple of songwriters I've written with who just didn't know where to start with chords. And I think that's where it's kind of helpful because you know, like, okay, like you kind of would want to end a song on the one, like the tonic chord or whatever. And sometimes a four, like a lot of country songs end on the four chord, which is really interesting. So like when you know theory, you can like pick up on stuff and you can do more interesting things. And especially with like mood and atmosphere, like if I'm writing, like for example, Halfway Out of This Town, like that song, there's a ton of chords in that that are like suspended chords and embellished chords, and it just adds a very pretty sound to it. But I knew like those chords would work and I knew how to put the progression together to make it flow well because I know theory. But for somebody who doesn't, maybe they would have just stuck with like a regular minor six instead of the embellished one I had. And so it definitely has its benefits.
Yep. See, now that's people are just like, what? I'm a trust me, I don't know how to do it, or I don't know why I do it. I just do. But I know minor is makes it sad. Unless you put it in B minor, and then for whatever reason, B minor makes it sound like a love song.
Oh, really? I'll
Yes.
have to
Yeah,
try to write something in B minor.
like look up Careless Whisper and what was the other one? Those 80s love songs or B minor. Most of them start like with a
Oh,
B
wow, that's
minor. Or
interesting.
they throw it in. What gets me is when they have a minor and a major in the same key. Like if you do a D minor or D major, like what? That doesn't fit. But
Oh
then,
yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I really like doing in my songs. There's a couple of my songs where I have modulations, which are basically key changes, and it's really fun doing like when you're doing the progression to translate into the other key, you use like a secondary dominance and like transition chords, so that's really fun. But yeah, I like getting creative with chords when it makes sense. But I don't go like super crazy if it doesn't make sense. There's so many of my songs that stick to the stereotypical like usual chord progression, especially the more overproduced ones where it's less about the chords and more like the vibe. But with something that's like a piano ballad, I try to make my stuff more complex, and so I try to go for the more creative chords.
see, it's funny when I'll just change the key, I'll throw a capo on a guitar, and my band, especially my bassist Jordan, he's so funny. He says, Jesse, he says, you, I said, you don't know theory, because he reads music. He took it for church and he plays saxophone in a band and he does bass, so he knows how to read the music. I don't. I go by ear. So when I want a capo, when I hear that it needs to be something different, I'll capo it. And so he's like, what are you in? He's got to transpose it over. I was like, what are you doing? And then I recently taught him a song that I just wrote. I wrote a couple months ago, but we're putting it to the band. It's a drop D, but I drop D both the E strings, and it makes a guitar ring. So I don't know what chords they actually are, but I'm like, okay, this is what. And then I do like a little bass run while I do like an E and an E, a D sharp, and a D for it, and it just comes and it brings it in. But I'm doing it with the bottom string too, and it sounds really good because the way it's set up, it's got it. There's no, I guess I'm hitting two notes, so it's almost like I'm playing a, you hear a chorus of a note, and it's like what? And they try to figure out how to play it. I'm like, I'm sorry, I can't tell you anything else. I said, this is what I do. To me, it's easy.
Yeah, I mean the thing too to keep in mind is that like a lot of people with anything creative, it's like if it sounds good or if it looks good, like with any kind of visual art, like it's good. And that's the thing I talk to my producer about like all the time, because I can like record well enough at my house to do like demos and stuff, but I know nothing about like engineering or anything. And so I'm always like, okay, how do you know like how much compression, or how do you know that, he's like, when it sounds good, it's good.
Right.
And so like I think like when you're talking about doing chords like you're doing, you may not know what exactly you're playing, but if it sounds good, that's what matters. Because let's face it, like the majority of your audience isn't going to think, oh my gosh, that's like a 5-7. Like no one's going to be sitting there thinking that, so it honestly doesn't matter.
Set my bases is like, damn it, Jesse, what are you doing?
Oh, that's funny.
I say, hey, just drop the drop your drop D on your bass too. So then that way you know exactly what I'm doing. You just follow me. Make it easy for you.
That's
All
funny. Oh
right, to the wheel of death we go, Demi.
gosh, okay.
Not the wheel of
These are
death.
fun.
Yeah, I love that. There was another podcast I got this idea from. It was a country, two ladies
Crazy Woman
talking.
Country?
Yes,
Crazy
I
Woman
think so.
Country?
Yes.
Yeah, I did it with them.
Did you do their podcast?
I was on their choice, yeah.
Oh, I'm so jealous. Yeah,
I
I
love
got
them.
that 20 question game that I do came from
It's
them.
so funny.
What's the wildest thing you've ever done?
Okay, this is the first thing that's coming to mind. So when I was 9 years, not 9 years old, when I was, yeah, the first time I was at the Bahamas when I was 9 years old, there is a water slide called the Leap of Faith. I don't know if you know of it, but it's basically like a vertical straight down drop out of this like pyramid thing, and it's really far and it's quite a thing. So
Yes, I saw
when I
that
was
on my
9 years
YouTube.
old, yeah, so when I was 9 years old, I went to the Bahamas for the first time. My dad did it, but I was too small. Like, I didn't weigh enough to do it because literally you would just fall forward and like slam onto like all the rocks and stuff. So it's not good. But I went back to the Bahamas when I was 18. When I turned 18, we took a family trip and I did it. And it was quite literally like one of the most wildest, most scariest things. I have a video of like when I did it. Insane.
There is a park here called Whitewater. So, yeah, from here in Georgia. I'm sure there's other places, but there's Whitewater, and there's a slide on it that, if I remember the name of, it's called the Cliffhanger, and it's basically you sit on the slide and then you drop, and it kind of goes. It can't be straight down; you'd come off. But it's such a steep drop that
Yeah.
it feels like you're going straight down, but because of the momentum and everything, that you're just stuck to the slide. Well, I made my son, who's 26 now, he's probably 12, maybe 10 at the time, to do that slide. I had him go there, I had him do it. I said, I'm doing it, you do it. So I went first, and then I was watching. And I bless his heart. I got off, and I'm watching him, and he comes down, and all of a sudden he goes spread eagle. He's like trying to stop himself with his hands and his feet. And it's like there's no stopping him. Oh, I wish
Yeah.
I had a video, but I was laughing too hard because he does not like stuff like that. I'm a big, I love adventure and I love adrenaline. I've been bungee jumping. I want to go parachuting one day, parasail. I love doing stuff like that.
Yeah. That's crazy. Yeah, the one in the Bahamas, it's really interesting because you were talking about like the feeling of it. It almost felt like you were going like horizontal, not straight down. Like that's how it felt. It was very weird. It was a really weird sensation. But there's a amusement park in Pittsburgh, near Pittsburgh, called Kennywood, and they have, it's called Sky Coaster, and it's literally just like a bungee thing where they take you up to the top of this thing and let you go. And my friends talked me into doing this never again. That was just terrifying.
There is a slide I saw in Ohio. I think it's Ohio. It's basically one of the big slides, and it goes up a ramp and it shoots you in the air into like a pool or a lake or whatever
Oh
they
my
got.
gosh.
And there's no, that's it. That's a slide. So you go down and you go up, and that up shoots you high. People start doing flips and stuff in the air. But I mean, it's shooting you literally like probably 30, 40 feet in the air before you land
Oh
on the
my
water.
gosh.
And I'm like, that looks so much fun. I want to go do that. And just see, my wife wants to go hiking when she retires, because I'm 45 years old. I'm about to be 46 in June, and she's retired in a few years because she's sheriff's office. So she says, well, I want to go hiking. I want to hike the mountains. I'm like, I've lived in the mountains my whole life. I said, look, if I got to go hiking with you, then you've got to do some of this stuff with me. And my stuff is parasailing,
Yeah.
parachuting,
bull running. I want to run the bulls. You know, one year I want to say I'm gonna run, I want to say I did it. These slides, stuff like that. I want adrenaline. I want to feel that.
It's fun.
Know. So that's why I said, well, earlier my deja vu. I think when I hit my deja vu, when I catch up to my deja vu, it's because I killed myself. I went too hard.
Oh man, that's funny.
All right. Well, let's listen to one more song. So we still got some time. Listen to one more song, and then we'll play some more of the 20 questions game. And I have your cover song. I have your cover song. I know what I'm going to do. Have you ever heard of Pam Tillis?
No, I haven't.
Okay. I'm going to share something with you real quick. This will be your, and I'll send it to you later too, so that you can hear it. But this is a song that I think you would be really good at. Do it your own way. You don't have to do it her way for sure, because that's not the point of this. It's the way, however you want to do it. And there's no time limit. Have whatever you want to take. So this is The River and the Highway by Pam Tillis. Can you hear this?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll give you just a little bit of it. And then her dad was very instrumental in me wanting to sing music. Mel Tillis is her dad.
She follows the path of least resistance.
You talk about storytelling. It's really good.
She doesn't care to see the mountaintop.
You never heard this song?
The melody reminds me of the one Hillary Duff song. No. It reminds me of Breathe by Faith Hill a little bit.
And she rolls, she's a river. Where she
it's a pretty
goes.
Song. I like it.
It's a really pretty song. So that's the one that...
okay, cool. Okay.
And I'll send it to you like a Spotify link so you can listen to
it.
And one person actually challenged me to a song. She said, all right, well, if I got to do it, you got to do one. I was like, okay, you give it to me. She picked ABBA, Winner Take All. I'm like, oh my God, really? You want me to do that one? And I was like, okay, I'll be game. I'll do it. So I took my guitar and tuned it to C sharp. So it's like really low and made it sad. And then I heard that guy from American Idol, Ian Tongi, whatever his name is.
Oh my God, the one he won.
Yes. And he did that song. And I'm like, well, crap, now I can't release it. So which one do you do for your final song?
Okay. How about we do Afterthought, which is on the EP 2 and what's a single. It's super sassy.
Okay. Tell me the story behind Afterthought.
So Afterthought, I'm happy I picked this one. So when I initially wrote Halfway Out of This Town, that song was called Afterthought.
Okay.
And I realized that that wasn't the perfect title for it. So I changed the title, but I still thought having a song called Afterthought would be cool. And so I wrote this song from that title. So that's how I even got to the song in the first place. And so this song is basically about, you know, like not letting people treat me like an afterthought. I'm sure you and like people listening have had the feelings of people inviting you last minute because they feel bad, or it's your birthday and they text you at 11:59 at night, oh, happy birthday, like as an afterthought. Or, you know, someone is just talking to you out of some kind of thing like, oh, like I'm giving you so much of my time, like you must appreciate it, you know? So it's like those situations where like, if you are going to treat me like this, like I don't need you in my life. I want people in my life who, you know, care and do things because they care, not because they feel like they have to or they feel bad or whatever. And okay. So that's what Afterthought is all about, and it's super sassy.
All right, well, let's listen to Afterthought.
I heard you're throwing an exclusive A-list party. Champagne, red carpet, chandeliers in a hotel lobby. But I'm not gonna show up wearing my designer dress, no. I'm good at home and got my glass kicking back in my sweats. Throw your crown at your feet, cause you're not royalty. Wouldn't care if you noticed me, even if you were a celebrity. Go right ride your wild high horse, and now watch karma run its course. I know what I deserve, so I'm gonna tell you what I'm not an afterthought. I hope you don't think you owe me any favors, 'cause I don't need your sympathy wrapped in paper. And when my birthday rolls around, I own the spotlight, yeah. I got no time for random texts at 11:59. Wait, who is this? Throw your crown at your feet, 'cause you're not royalty. Wouldn't care if you noticed me, even if you were a celebrity. Go ride your wild high horse, and now watch karma run its course. I know what I deserve, so I'm gonna tell ya what I'm not an afterthought. I'm not gonna be, not gonna be, not gonna be. I'll say it again in case you forgot. I'm not gonna be an afterthought. I'm so much stronger now. Don't forget it, so you won't ever get me down. I hate to break a deal, but you really need a taste of reality. A shot of truth so bittersweet, and all royalty. So why don't you throw your crown at your feet, 'cause you're not royalty. Wouldn't care if you noticed me, even if you were a celebrity. Go ride your wild high horse, and now watch karma run its course. I know what I deserve, so I'm gonna tell you what I'm not an afterthought. I'm not gonna be, not gonna be, not gonna be. Say it again in case you forgot. I'm not gonna be an afterthought. I'm not gonna be, not gonna be.
An afterthought. I like that. that little funky bass vibe, the bump 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 bump. I like that.
Yeah, it's a fun one.
See, I love that style of music. I love funk music and blues music, and I love all that stuff. I have country voice. I can't help what I sound like, but I'm a rocker at heart. So we do a lot of stuff in the Southern rock, but I love the. If I had a soul voice, I would be doing funk music all day long. Bump, 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 bump.
Yeah, yeah. No, that was really fun. I remember when I had the idea, I sent just like a very stripped piano demo to my guitarist, and he like sent me back literally just the electric guitar, and I was like, oh my god, like I was like so hooked. The groove was ridiculous, mm-hmm. And when we like finished a production in the studio and stuff, it was totally a blast. So that was a fun one.
Oh yeah, that's a definite fun vibe, and it's fresh in an aspect that people I can't believe anybody's never thought of that. I don't think I've ever heard a song called Afterthought, or even by talking about being an afterthought. I'm sure it's out there. I haven't heard every song, but
yeah,
for the most part, I haven't heard that. And that was such it's clever. It's very, very clever.
Thank you.
So thank you for coming on the show. I've had a good time.
Yeah, of course. No, this has been totally a blast. Like one of the most fun podcasts I've been on. So thank you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. That's what I try to tell people. That's what I make this show is it's more conversation. Yeah. We're going to talk about your music because that's what you come on for. But if you talk to me, I'm going to sidetrack you a lot. I just do. This is the way it happens. And I would say I apologize for it, but I don't apologize for it, because that's, to me, we're two artists in here, songwriters just talking shop and having a good time.
That's for sure.
So we're not quite done yet. We got a couple more Wheel of Death questions that I always like to ask. But before we get into that, tell everybody, Demi, all your social media, where they can find you, all that stuff.
Yeah, so the best way to find me is on my website. You can get there two ways. You can do DemiMichelleMusic.com. That will take you to my website. But my actual domain is DemiMschwartz.com, which is DemiMschwartz. And that is where you can find my social media. I'm Demi Michelle on all platforms, same handle at Demi M. Schwartz. And on my website, you can find information about my music, my podcast, my blog, and things I'm doing with the author side as well.
Okay, but I say, are you using your name too for the writing for the novels, or do you have like a pseudonym that you use?
Yeah, I'm using my name too. That's why I have my website, the main domain name, can't speak. The main domain is Demi M. Schwartz because I'm registered as a songwriter under my full name. And when I get published one day, I'm going to use my full name. So that's why it's just better to have everything in one place. But I have DemiMichelleMusic.com as well, just because that's specifically music. That'll take you there as well.
Okay. See, now I meant to ask you earlier too about like about the storytelling, the books, because that's fun. That, to me, that's so interesting. So let's say you write a novel, right, and you want to pitch it. What is your next step? What do you do to? Because I know like songs, they don't take unsolicited music. So how do you pitch your stories to people? Is there like websites you use that help you kind of find who's looking or?
Yeah, surprisingly, it's super easy to find agents. And I thought it was really difficult when I started. But there's a website called Query Tracker, which is where most of the submissions are. They'll say when they're open to submissions, what they're looking for. And that's what I would say like 90, 95% use. Also, like every agent has their own website, like the agency website. So it's easy to find different agencies and look at the agent's bios and their submission guidelines and how to submit if they use Query Tracker or just accept through email or a different form on their website. There's also a website called Manuscript Wishlist where you can find a lot of information as well. So there's definitely ways of finding people, but after you pitch, it's basically like the waiting game, hoping to get a response and hoping it's not a rejection when it usually is. And then eventually, like when you get a full request, then that's when you're like really in the stress boat because that's basically one more step between you and getting an offer of representation. And then I'm like keeping my fingers crossed to get at least one offer of representation because once you do that, like once you get one, then the ball is basically in your court because then you contact every agent you've submitted to that still has your submission and you basically say, I got an offer. And you give them a deadline. It's usually 2 weeks. And you say, I have an offer. You have 2 weeks to review my materials, see if you want to request my full manuscript. And if they do, then you basically set up calls within that window, talk to all the agents interested in representing you, and then you get to pick your agent. And then it's basically in the agent's position then to find you an editor and a publisher. So that's why you need an agent because there are some publishing houses that are smaller, more indie publishers that still do traditional publishing, but they can accept unagented submissions, but like the big five publishers like HarperCollins and Simon and Schuster, all of them, like you can't submit to them unless you have an agent. So a lot of it is you basically need an agent to get to those big publishers. And my dream is always to be published by big five publishers. So that's why I'm trying to get an agent. There's some other amazing publishers as well, but the first step is getting that agent. So, yep.
See, now some of my favorite movies are about authors, right? About people that write, like Her Alibi. I don't know if you've ever seen that movie with Tom
No, I
Selleck.
haven't.
It's an 80s movie. He's a like a romance novel, right? And he goes to like the courthouse and he watches all the people on trial and he writes his stories from it. So he finds this lady, she's like a Romanian circus person. She is accused of killing her boyfriend. And so he makes it her alibi. He becomes her alibi and moves her into his house while he's doing this. And he doesn't know if she's a killer or not. And it's so funny because it's like one of those cheesy type of like he's a cheesy romance novelist. And so he's writing all this stuff about him working out when actually he's just holding onto the trash can. It's you got to check it out. It's a
That
hilarious
sounds
movie.
like a rom-com, like a romantic
Yes.
comedy.
It is. And
Yeah.
Ro Romance in the Stone, another one of my favorite movies from you can tell my age, 80s. Kathleen Turner, she's a again a ro she's a ro I don't know what it's about romantic novelists that I watch the movies for. I guess that's all they want to do. But she's a romantic novelist and she has to go save her sister in like Mexico or something. I don't know, but it's
That's so
fun.
funny.
Yeah. Those are some good movies. There's some homework for you, Demi, to listen to watch the movies.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've had a fun time.
Yeah, me too. This has been really fun.
And I said, we're not done. I got a couple more spin the wheel kind of questions for you. I like that it has its own sound effect. What is a vivid childhood memory?
Oh my gosh. A vivid childhood memory. This is like one of those things where, like, if I wasn't asked like this, I'd be able to name 50,000. Favorite childhood memory. This might be basic, but like when I was younger, we went to Disney a lot, and I have like we went to Chef Mickey's, or is that what it's called? Chef Mickey's, where they you can eat with Mickey Mouse. I think that's what it's called. I have a really vivid memory from going the one time, and like eating with all the characters. So that's
That's
one
cool.
coming to mind.
That's good. That's a good memory to have. I've been to Disney World a couple of times, one as a kid and then a couple of my kids, because I have twins that are 13, and then like I said, my oldest is 26. So he's I remember taking him, and I remember taking the kids. And I remember what I remember the most, because it was probably more recent, is I took Gibson and Cheyenne. They're twin boy and girls. And Gibson was going through some stage where he was making up a family. I don't know why. I couldn't tell you why. He had this tragic backstory about how they died and he was left. And I don't know where he got it from. I have no idea. But I remember Cheyenne was talking to one of the princesses. I think it was Belle, if I remember. I don't remember which princess, but she was talking to her, and she had a little dress on and she was curtsying and she was being a cute little girl. And then Gibson goes up there and he tells a story about how his family has died. And I was like, oh my God. I was like, and this princess lady is just patting him and giving him hugs, and I'm like, it's not true.
That's so funny. Oh my gosh, that's crazy. That's wild. Another one coming to mind just now is when I was younger, for my sister and I, like when we had birthday parties, we would have like wild birthday parties. I had my Sweet 16 was on a boat on the Gateway Clipper in Pittsburgh, like on the rivers, which was really fun. But one that was coming to mind was my mom got like this like animal place. Like they brought like a bunch of animals, and it was like this, like we had like a there was like a tiger or a leopard, I can't remember which. They left that in the cage, but they had like this snake, they had a monkey, a fox, like all this like wildlife animals, and they brought it to my house for this birthday party. I think I was like 9 or 10 when I had that one, but that was a fun one.
A snake you can keep. No, thank you.
I like held it was like a big fat yellow one, and I remember my little cousin at the time, like she grabbed it and like squeezed it really hard, like a couple of its scales went like it was disgusting, but yeah.
Oh, no, thank you. I've had my childhood filled of snakes. Now I don't know. Do you know how to swim?
Yeah.
Did your parents give you lessons, or did they do the old-fashioned way like mine did?
I have lessons.
Okay, mine, because I lived on like an 18-acre farm in around Milledgeville, Putnam County. The way they taught me to swim, this was 40 years ago, 40 something years ago, they threw me in the damn lake. And that's how you swim. You sink or swim. So he threw my dad threw me in the lake, and when he did, a water moccasin popped up behind me. So he had to jump in and save me. And that Milledgeville is I'm deathly afraid of snakes. I will throw my wife in front of it and run. I just will.
Oh my gosh, I'd be afraid too after that. That's crazy. I can't believe they just threw me in a lake. I mean, at least do it in a pool where there's not like any animals.
Well, we didn't have a pool. We had a lake, so we used what we had. So he just threw me in the lake.
Well, like a community pool or something.
Oh, well, see, I think this was South Georgia in the 80s. They didn't really have a lot of subdivisions then. So we had 18-acre farm that with cows and chickens. And
Yeah.
if you ever seen a headless chicken run, I have. It scared the hell out of me. I have. Because they still the muscle spasm. So I'm sure in my mind it's probably wasn't as vivid as what I'm thinking. But I just remember a chicken chasing me without a head. So I just. Oh, that's my childhood. Welcome to the What's the weirdest dream you've ever had?
Oh, okay. This is the time where I wish I like would write down my dreams, because I've had so many weird ones. I don't know if this would qualify as weird, but it's the most vivid one coming to mind right now, and it was weird, but it was anxiety inducing as well. So, when I was about to graduate with my master's degree, this was like a couple days before I did my thesis defense, where I had to like read for my novel and do my whole defense thing. Well, I had a dream that I was standing like at the podium doing my thing, and another author walked in and like just started talking and like talking about their book. Well, I looked at my mentor and was like, "This is my time." And she's like, "No, your time's up." I said, "No, like I was literally here for like 5 minutes. I didn't even start reading my book yet." And she's like, "No, you failed. Like this is it. Like you're out of time." And it was like so terrifying. And then I remember like just the people, like it was like that thing where they were all like blank stares. Like everybody in the room was just like eyes glazed over, blank stares. And I got like dragged out of the classroom because my time was up. And then I woke up and I texted my mentor and I was like, "This was the most terrifying thing." And she's like, "I should hire somebody to do that, like walk in and pretend your time's up." But no, please don't do that. So yeah, that was terrifying. So
Yeah, that sounds like a very anxiety-driven dream.
yeah.
See, I had one. I have had the one I remember a lot of, but one I remember talking about keeping on like the story of snakes is when we moved up here to Cherokee County. We had like 9 acres, and we lived up here. I still own all the family on land, but we had, that's when we got a pool. That's when we actually did something. We have a swimming pool now. We can swim all summer long. It was great. Well, I had a dream that everybody in my family turned into snakes, like snake people. Like, I don't know if you've ever seen that Conan movie with James Earl Jones, and he turns into a snake. It's Arnold Schwarzenegger and James Earl Jones, and it's Conan. And I'm like, oh, I must have watched that movie or thought about it. But everybody in my family turned into a snake. And then I went outside to the pool to clean it. There was two snakes in the dadgum pool. I'm like, nope, I quit. I ain't swimming. Forget it. I'm not part of this anymore.
Oh my gosh, that's terrifying. You must have not have liked Nagini and Harry Potter then. The snake.
No, that was not my favorite scene. All right,
Oh.
I got one more question for you. My phone's about to die, didn't bring a charger, so I'm gonna ask you the questions I ask at the very end anyway. What is the best advice you've ever got?
Oh my gosh, the best advice I've ever gotten. That's different than the advice I would give, which is always be authentic. But the one that I was given is to be patient and that things take time. And I think this is really important, especially if you're in any kind of creative industry, because with music, things take time. With publishing, things are definitely taking time. And I think that sometimes you expect like instant gratification or to wake up one day and have a hit song or an interview or like something like that. Like it took me a really long time. I released my debut single Into Focus in 2019, and I really started to see things happen for me in 2021, and then things started kind of getting bigger in 2022. So it took years. And I think that you really need to, even though it's difficult, just be patient and trust the process because everybody's path's different. And so don't look at a friend and think, well, they've only been doing this long and look where they're at, because you don't know what they've done behind the scenes. You don't know the connections you may have. And so just remember everybody's path's different and things will start happening for you when the time is right. And unexpectedly as well. Like this year, I am nominated or a finalist in 5 categories at the ISSA Awards and 3 Josie Music Award nominations. And even like 2 years ago, I'm lucky if I would have had gotten an interview. And so just be patient and focus on the things you can control. If you're a songwriter, focus on writing your songs and recording your songs and being the best version of yourself that you can be online and in interviews and all that. If you have any other creative passion, just focus on doing that passion and not losing your love for it, because a lot of the other things are out of your control and persistence is a big part of it. So be patient. Things take time, but things will happen for you eventually.
That is really good advice. I'm part of the ISSA too, so I've been with them for a couple of years. Really
Are
good
you going to
organization.
the awards?
I try to go every year, but they have it on my twin's birthday every year. It's always August 6th is when my twins are. My wife's is the 7th. This year, I think it may be the 4th is when they started, so I'm gonna try. This is the first year that I may can go, but the past 2 years has always been on my kid's birthday. It's like I can't do it. And I'm close enough
Yeah.
that I can drive. They're 45 minutes from here. I try to
Oh,
get
wow.
to Minnie
Okay.
to come on a show. We've talked about it before because they do a lot of stuff for independent artists. And I forgot to do stuff for the band for that, so I missed the deadline. But I got the stuff for the podcast, got it. So it's up for like Radio DJ of the Year, even though I'm technically
Yay!
not a radio, but I take it. I'll take whatever I can
Yeah,
get.
close enough. Yeah, good luck. And the awards this year are on the 5th, so hopefully you can go.
A fifth. Okay. Yeah, I knew it was a different date. I knew that we were the kids. I think this year was one year that I can go. I talked to my wife because I know so many people in ISSA that are going, and I met a lot of people. I've talked to a lot of people on this show from them. And
Yeah.
it's funny. Most of them that I meet, I don't meet through there, but when I find out, oh, you're a part of it too? Oh, great. That's cool.
Yeah, I met some really great people through there. It's like a really great community as well.
Yeah, and that's kind of what this show is for. And this, I only ask two things of my guest. One, of course, is when it comes out, share it with everybody, all over, whoever you got, family,
Yeah.
friends, everybody. And two is you pay it forward. Now you're kind of in one of those situations like me, is you have like publicists and artists and songwriters probably reach out to you. You can send me a list of people, or you can send them my way, however you want to do it. We'll talk to them. And I don't care where they're at in their journey. I don't care if they're what genre they are. Now, if they're publicists and they have a bunch of different artists that they promote, they are more than welcome to send me for interviews. They can send them for like the radio show, the MP3s,
Yeah.
or for the countdown. Like I said, for years, like I said, with this, whatever guest I do is when your episode comes out, I will put your song in the weekly top 10.
Yay.
And what if people don't know what it is, it's all fan based. So there's the top 10 that are voted on by everybody, and then I premiere four songs each week. And if you last 12 weeks, because it's all, like I said, it's all fan based, you'll have about a week to get as many votes as you can just to stay in that top 10. If you last
Yeah.
in the top 10 for 12 weeks, I will retire your song. And what that means is it still have its own, be part of a Spotify playlist, but it won't be in a countdown. But you also will get a featurette on my indie radio station out of Paris, which is ran by Muriel. She's part of the group. She said, "Hey," because I put one of their artists in. She goes, "Hey, will you want to have people like come on the show and do featurettes and stuff?" I was like, "If you want to, that'd be great." Because I think that's part of the problem is that people get locked into like a competition thing. We kind of said earlier that they don't want to really help, but this business and is all about networking. You got to share, you don't got to, you can do what you want to, but you should share other people's music, other people,
Yeah.
because I mean, your style of mine, I'll just listen to something here a second, but my stuff is different than yours. Why would I not help you? Even if you did the same stuff I did, why would I not help you? Why?
Yeah. Yeah, I completely agree with like not seeing it as a competition and supporting other people. And that's like, I mean, you and I are in the same boat with having a podcast. We're dedicating our time to speaking to others in the same in industry as us. And I learned so much over the past 2 years just from literally talking to people who are in the same industry as me, but doing different things, writing different kinds of songs in different areas of the industry. And I think, you know, what we really need to remember is that at the end of the day, we're all people with the passion. And if you start looking at it as, you know, oh, they're the same genre as me and we're up for the same awards, so I'm not gonna talk to that person because they can win over me. Like, that's just not the mindset at all. And, you know, I literally just on my podcast, I had an artist on the show that I'm in, I believe, two categories with for the ISSA Awards. And she actually, like, I didn't know of her, but she commented on my Instagram post after I posted congratulations. And I didn't know who she was, so I looked at her page and saw she was nominated too, told her congratulations. Then we started like messaging each other. We're friends now. She was on my podcast, and I'm not could have like not support her just because we're basically against each other in categories. Like, she's talented, and I think, you know, supporting other people in the industry is really important. And you really make such great friends if you take that approach and not see it as a competitive collective effort of creating great music.
Yeah, because my mindset of it is simple, is I look at it as a party. So
Oh, yeah.
if I know 100 different musicians, you know what? I can throw one hell of a party.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree.
I'll come on down and we'll play. And I mean, I like that. Now, don't get me wrong, I love competition. I am 100% ready to compete, but it's more of a friendly way when I do this. And
For sure.
even the Georgia versus thing, I call it a competition because I mean, there's got to be a winner, but it's not really. It's more the way it's set up. And if you don't take advantage of it, that's on you guys. I can't help you. But the way it's set up is you're supposed to follow everybody, songwrite, co-write. Like I love co-writing. If you ever want to co-write, I'm up for it. I
I
do that
love
stuff.
doing co-writes. They're my favorite.
Yeah, we should. I mean, do a Zoom if you want to. I'll like I said, we have different styles, but it doesn't matter. We'll try it and see. But that's what it's for. And I've said this before in a podcast, is like what drives me crazy is like when you go to open mics and you play out too, right? Okay, so when you go out and play, especially in an open mic or a songwriter's room, hang around and listen to other people. The artists that get up and leave right after their set, it drives me crazy. Now, I
It's
get it if
disrespectful.
it is, and I get if you got another gig or if like when I go to Nashville, I'm 3 hours away from Nashville, but I'll listen for a little bit and I'll drive home because I've got a good ways to go. But I won't just do my set and leave. I'll stay there for another 2 hours and then I'll leave, because I have a 3 hour drive to go. I'm gonna make my time worth it. But the ones that get up and leave like right after, like I said, it's A, it's disrespectful. B, it's also you're missing out on talking to songwriters that maybe want to co-write. And especially like if you're in Nashville side of town, you don't know who you're talking to because there's so many people up there. Like you would be surprised that like the guy you're sitting next to, he wrote songs with Garth Brooks, and maybe he can't play guitar, but he's a good songwriter. And if you blow him off, you just blew your chance at helping your career by not talking and not. I'm an introverted kind of person myself. I had a speech impediment growing up, so I do this podcast to force myself to talk to people. Now you get me out and about by myself, I'm probably sitting in the corner drinking and just watching and quiet. You get somebody, give me a guitar, we sit there, play, start talking music, playing music. As you see, I get sidetracked. We've talked for an hour and a half.
Yeah, no, I'm an introvert too, but I agree. And I think the other thing that really bothers me is like at this is more for like bigger concerts when people will just completely ignore the opening act and go for the main person. That makes me mad too.
Yeah, see, I've never gone to the big concerts much. My wife and me just went to Alison Krauss and Robert Plant in Alabama, and that's the first one I've been to in 30 years, maybe. The last concert I remember going to was Charlie Daniels at Lake Lanier. Talk about like a big act. I listen to more of the stuff around here. Or I'm playing or I'm doing something else. I don't spend my money on the bigger ones. They don't need it, so I don't really go to it. I wanted to go to the Eagles, but it's $100 a ticket. I'm like, I can't afford that. I'm not going to sit a mile back to listen to them. No, thank you. I can listen on the radio. But she got free tickets because she's, like I said, military too. So we went and listened. Great concert. I had a band on here. Well, a brother duo, the Lock Your Boys, the one I just released their episode. They opened up for Bare Naked Ladies.
Oh, cool.
And they were telling me the story of the way they set them up is they put them in like in you had this had a whole sound stadium and stuff for Bare Naked Ladies, but they put them like in what the area where everybody meets, kind of like in that general area, as you're walking in. And they're really good. So the problem that they had was that nobody would leave and go to the stadium. They were sitting there listening to the opening act.
Oh, wow. I mean, that's a good problem to have because a lot of opening acts get ignored.
Right. As so it just made me think, like, well, they're probably never going to ask you again because you took their people.
That's funny.
Oops.
Yeah, I just think like respecting everybody is really important.
It is. It is. It doesn't cost you anything.
No. Nope.
Well, Demi, I've had fun.
Me too. This is really fun.
So tell everybody before I officially end the interview, one more time where they can find you.
So the best place to go is DemiMichelleMusic.com, and that'll take you to my website.
All right. Everybody, this is Georgia Songbird, and that was Demi Michelle. Thank you, Demi.
Thank you so much for having me. This was so fun.